For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to a Monday edition of the Juice on the Cuse podcast. It's a three-headed monster for this first segment. Matt D'Agostino here with Wes Chang and Brad Bierman of Rivals. Also, thank you for tuning in on the Believe Network. So, Wes, Brad, 77-68, Syracuse loss on Saturday in the JMA Dome as Joe Girard had his homecoming to Syracuse, now as a member of the Clemson Tigers and the other orange team won on Saturday, guys. Brad, I think I'll start with you here. What were your thoughts on the game in general? Had a lot of runs, both good and bad, but in the end, Syracuse didn't have enough to pull off a win.
Well, to your point, Matt, the other orange team won. I love to swap teams this year. I love that Clemson team. I love having 6'10", 6'10", 6'8", a center that can play outside and under, guys that rebound, guards that are 6'1", 6'3", and can stroke the three. Can that be my Syracuse team this year? I'd be pretty happy. Great performance by Clemson. They did what they had to do. And tip your hat to Joe Girard, because that's a lot of pressure for Girard to come back to the Dome. All eyes on him. Days of talking about it. Didn't matter. They just beat North Carolina. You got to come back to Central New York and face your old team. So tip your hat to him for his performance. And you know, Syracuse played as well as I thought that they could play there, you know, tie that game up late. And they just don't have the athletes. Let's face it. There's going to be a roster reshuffling. We can talk about that a little bit later. But for next season, they just don't have the athletes. We see 5-5 after the first 10 games in the ACC, told you all you need to know. And now they're going to struggle to do that in the second half. So I just thought that, in the end, Clemson's a better team. They showed it, and they're going to make a run in the NCAA tournament, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think if you look at the box score, it kind of says it right there, because, you know, Clemson had 41 rebounds and Syracuse had 24. So when you talk about those trees in there, Brad, you know, starting with PJ Hall, who finished with 15 points and 10 rebounds, and then Clark, you know, he hauls down 10 rebounds as well. And Syracuse just doesn't have the athletes up front. Your starting lineup is essentially Malik Brown with four guards alongside him, and that's not going to get the job done rebounding. And, of course, if you can't shoot well from the outside, you know, Syracuse 7-for-23 from downtown. You know, Chris Bell did play well, 4-for-10 shooting. That's the first game Syracuse lost this season where he's hit three or more three-pointers. But when you have guys like your starting backcourt shooting, you know, combined 2-for-8 from downtown, it's just not going to get it done. So, you know, Brad, to your point, I do think that they're struggling. They don't have the athletes right now, especially up front, to really compete with the big boys like Clemson. And Brad, you know, one thing I wanted to move on from, you know, we talk about the game in front of us, but of course there's still the rest of the season left. Matt and I have been discussing this a lot on the podcast recently, but I just don't see a path forward to the NCAA tournament. What do you see for the rest of this regular season as we get closer to the ACC tournament? I want to throw that out to both you and Matt, but start with you, Brad.
Okay. Well, I was thinking back that we talked 6 weeks ago. I said no NCAA tournament, and I certainly have not changed my mind now. And going through the rest of the schedule, the seven games, not going to beat North Carolina in the Dome. We all would like to see one of those glorious moments, a big upset, but that's just realistically not going to happen. Georgia Tech is a toss-up to me. I could see winning, but I certainly can see losing. So I'm going to give a W here just to hear me out through the schedule. At NC State, I say a loss. You know, they played pretty well in the second half there, but I don't like that matchup. Notre Dame, a win in the Dome. Virginia Tech, I'll give a win in the Dome because they played well in the Dome. At Louisville, I'm going to say a loss because they barely beat them. I think Louisville will be better by then. A home game, one of those, you know, back and forth games, could be a fluke shot. And then they didn't beat Clemson in the Dome. I don't see them winning at Clemson in the regular season finale. So that's 18 and 13. And I also mentioned 6 weeks ago that week off really scares me between the regular season ending and the ACC tournament. Syracuse has just been an outlier in the ACC tournament. Never have won two consecutive games in any year. Didn't play in the 15 tournament. They've never had success there. So I'm just not optimistic. Certainly not. No NCAA tournament. And now I'm at, you know, wondering, would 18-13, 19-14 get you an NIT bid?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're looking at, you know, even a best case scenario. Let's say they run the table with wins against North Carolina and at Clemson to finish the regular season. I still feel like you need a couple of wins in the ACC tournament to justify anything. I mean, now we were wondering a couple of weeks ago, when would we start to see the orange on that bubble watch list, the work left to do list, and they were on it for a week or two, and now there's no signs of them anywhere. And it just doesn't seem like there's any realistic stretch that they could do outside of winning the ACC tournament and getting an automatic bid to where they find themselves in the field of 68.
I agree. And as we sit here now, Super Bowl's over, spring training's going to begin. We're in college basketball season. We're all fans. And this is the time of year when you really want to get your team going and you're looking towards March Madness, of course. And I'm sitting here, quite frankly, depressed about it because we're facing a third consecutive year of no NCAA tournament. You're out of any sort of relevancy nationally. And really, Syracuse hasn't been ranked since 2019. So I'm bringing up these warts here now. No tournament with COVID in 20. Had that nice little run in 21. And that's it. And I kind of feel like this is what it must have felt like to be a Syracuse fan 50 years ago in the early 70s before the run began in 73 when they didn't make the tournament for three consecutive years. Syracuse not in the NCAA tournament when you look at the all-time winningest programs. I know Michigan's way down this year and Indiana and Michigan State and Villanova, but wow, it's really tough. It's tough for and you know, you see it. You see the dome crowds aren't as big and the turnouts aren't there, only the most diehard fans. So really says a lot. And as I alluded to earlier, let's see where the program's going from here. We talked about the seven games and that's just this season, but wow, there's going to be a lot of off-season news around this program this spring and summer.
Not ranked since 2019. Our friend Wes Chang was just a mere 35-year-old, wasn't sporting anywhere near the lush mustache he's rocking here for us today. At the risk of turning over the leaf to maybe a more optimistic viewpoint here, Brad, while we've got you, tell us what we've got with men's lacrosse so far for Syracuse and where you see this season unfolding as we move into spring.
Well, let's hope that Gary Gates laying the framework for getting a program back to where it has to be for Red Autry in the basketball program, because let's face it, lacrosse, you know, hasn't been relevant either on the national stage for such a great program, the first losing season. And so Gary Gate has, you know, found his way. He's changed defensive coordinators this season. But I kind of think he's finally got it where he wants it to be in year number three, certainly from a talent standpoint. And I'm going to start with the scheduling. I thought, you know, opening up the season with seven consecutive home games was really interesting scheduling, because three early on really get the team, you know, pressed for playing games on short, you know, short time span, and having the chance to play a lot of his roster, I thought really made a lot of sense. And it leads up to the first milestone game of the season with Maryland coming up, the fourth ranked team on Saturday. And so the transfer portal utilization, the recruiting, getting his coaching staff just right. Now I think here in year three, that's where Gary Gates done it. And it all starts where else? At the X, at the faceoff circle. And Mason Cohn's really done a fantastic job coming from Tufts. What an athlete there from California. And he's won 76% of the faceoff. So when you have the ball 70% of the time, I know you're playing, you know, lower Division I teams to start, you're still going to have so many opportunities to score. And I was thinking about this with Joey Spallina, obviously, you know, the superstar. And emerging here as a sophomore to maybe have, you know, one of the great, you know, all-time Syracuse careers. I hate looking forward like that, having seen all the great players. But Wes and I have talked about this, you know, the great Jim Brown, he's far above a four-sport athlete at Syracuse. And then Gary Gate, Michael Powell, and, you know, Joey Spallina, you know, getting there the way his statistics are after 2 years, is he going to be that next superstar? And I noticed the irony of all three, Gate, Powell, and Spallina, all with siblings, brothers on the team. And I thought that was very interesting that these superstars have had their brothers, and certainly Paul Gate, number to be retired this weekend, was in that category, but very interesting. And as Spallina goes in the offense, Will Mark in the net, you have a veteran player. It's really a sound defense with the veteran short stick midfielders. I won't go through the whole roster, but really, like, again, how Gary Gates materialized here in year number three.
Never underestimate the power of a good Italian name, Brad. Spallina. Just remember that. It goes a long way, you know. That's just my personal opinion. Maybe I'm a little biased. But, Brad, we appreciate you hopping on here for a little bit. And if all else fails, we've got baseball season coming up. Mets and Yankees, right? No, I didn't think so either. No, there's really not a lot to look forward to. We're putting it all on Syracuse lacrosse at this point, fellas. Brad, thanks for the time. We'll catch up with you again soon here.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.
Next on the Juice and the Cues podcast, we'll further dive into Syracuse's 9-point home loss to Clemson on Saturday. You're listening to the Juice and the Cues podcast on the Believe Network.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Back here on the Juice on the Cues podcast, Matt and Wes talking Syracuse hoops. 77-68 loss to Clemson on Saturday at home. And 'tis the season, Wesley. We'll, with it being Valentine's Day week, we'll do a little thing we call date or hate. I don't know about your dating history. I think it was one and the same for me, basically. To date me was to hate me, I think, pretty much is how that went. At least the track record showed that early in my youth. But Wes, we'll get started with this. The Joe Girard homecoming, 18 points, was a game-high honors for him in his return to the Dome, and hit 2,000 career points now in his fifth year in college hoops. So a nice way to ring in the return home. Looking, and we've talked about this on and off throughout the season, looking at the guys most notably missing from last year's roster that could have been on the roster this year. Tell me this. Syracuse misses Joe Girard more than Jesse Edwards. Date, if you agree. Hate, if you disagree.
So, Matt, I'm going to go with hate here. And you see it in the box score of the Clemson game. Again, I mentioned it before. The Tigers had 41 rebounds. Syracuse had 24. And their win over Louisville, they were minus 19 on the glass. They're basically playing with Malik Brown surrounded by a bunch of guards. Jesse Edwards is averaging 15 points, 8.4 rebounds. Syracuse could certainly use that. Yes, Joe Girard gives you that perimeter shooting, but so does Chris Bell, who's been shooting 39.6% this season from downtown. He's just as streaky as Girard was. So give me Jesse Edwards. I'd rather have him right now over Girard.
I have nothing left to say. In terms of your response, I would date it. I agree 100% with that. I think Jesse Edwards could take this team to another level that they just don't have given their current personnel.
Matt, let's do another date or hate. So Joe Lunardi mentioned during the game on Saturday that the conference record is not going to be a factor for the tournament selection committee when deciding which teams make the tournament. So, Matt, date or hate?
Definitely hate. At what point does the bulk of your schedule not necessarily matter? Like, where are we at this point? And granted, you know, we were watching Syracuse in the days of 7-8 Big East teams getting bids to the tournament, to where nearly every opponent you're playing is a tournament-type team. And you want to be given credit for winning those games, whether it's home, on the road, whatever the case is. But, like, You're telling me if Duke goes into North Carolina and beats the Tar Heels at their place, that doesn't matter? Like, because of the – or that win in terms of their record doesn't matter? I'm not buying that. I think it most certainly has to register at some level. But to not level – to not register at all was surprising to hear, even more surprising to think that it doesn't show up on the radar for anybody on the tournament committee.
Yeah, Matt, no disagreements here. This is a big time hate, because if you go, say, 20-0 in the Patriot League, that's one thing. But if you go 20-0 in the ACC, you're probably knocking off Duke, North Carolina, and Virginia on the way to get to that perfect record. So strength in schedules and conferences, one of the reasons why leagues like the ACC get multiple at-large bids. So you have to consider that record in that case. Big misfire for Joe Lunardi, in my opinion.
Speaking of, Lunardi thinks that there could be now five ACC teams entering the big dance, with Virginia, Clemson, and maybe even Wake Forest entering the fold as we get towards March. Wes, third topic. We were talking about it with Brad a little bit, looking at the rest of the regular season schedule. Seven games remaining. Does Syracuse win five or more of their final seven games? Yes, they do. You date it, or no, they don't, and you hate it.
Oh, Matt, you know, it pains me to say it, but I hate it. And I know you put 5 of 7 because of that magical number of 20. But to me, because you have that thin margin of error, and Brad talked about it, you're about to lose to number 7 UNC at the Dome tomorrow, the same team that demolished Syracuse 103-67 a few weeks ago. Then you have to finish the season up at Clemson, who just beat you at home on Saturday. That leaves Georgia Tech, NC State, Notre Dame, Virginia Tech, and Louisville all as must wins. There's no way that Syracuse goes 5-0 in that stretch. I think really best case scenario, you're talking about 4-1 to get them to 19 wins.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree. I think at this point, pulling off the upset has not been something we've seen Syracuse capable of doing to this point. And, you know, they were right there with Clemson on Saturday, tied at 60. And then Clemson ends the game on a 17-8 run. So I don't know what it is to get them over that hump in the final 5-6 minutes of a close game like that, but they haven't been able to show it to this point this season.
Okay, Matt, I got another one for you. Judah Mintz returns for a junior season, date or hate?
I want to date this, and I think this has been my MO for the better part of a decade or more now. I get why guys want to leave and go to the pros, to get paid for it, to play in the NBA and live out a childhood dream. I get all of those reasons. It's a little bit cloudier now with the NIL situation, where guys are making money in college, and maybe that's a little bit less of a deterrent now for them to stay in school. Judah Mintz last year was bottom half of the second round pick in mock drafts. Judah Mintz has had a great year, 18, 19 points a game. He's shown the defense. At times, he's shown being a very capable distributor. And what it has gotten him is to be a bottom half of the second round pick in many mock drafts this year. Selfishly, I would like to see him, as a fan of the team, stay and have some more continuity in this roster moving forward. Do I think he actually does stay? I think history shows the guys who are teetering on that line the first time very rarely come back again a second time. So I think he's probably going to move and put his name in the NBA draft, and we'll see him as a professional basketball player after the season. So I want to date it and say he'll be back for a junior season. I think with the guys coming in, I think it would be great to have him. But I think at the end, I'm going to have to hate it. I think he will not be back for Syracuse as a junior.
So, Matt, I'm going to read the fine line on the way you wrote this question. So when you wrote it, you said you left out returns to Syracuse for his junior season. So I'm actually going to date on this.
Okay.
I could see Judah Mintz going to the NBA Combine, getting another evaluation and wanting to return, but like Joe Girard, wanting to work in a different system that maximizes his ability and gets him a more direct path to the NCAA tournament so he can get a little more exposure. So I'm not a huge proponent of saying date here, but I could see Judah Mintz returning to college basketball more than I could think Syracuse winning 5 of 7 to close the year. And again, I'm going to talk about this in our next topic, but with the transfer portal, how that's set up, how many people come and go, and we're talking about top stars here, they're transferring within teams. I could actually see Judemans returning for his junior season, just maybe not to Syracuse.
That's absolutely fair. Final question, as you were mentioning, Wes. Let's take the 8 current rotation players for Syracuse, and this is assuming Peter Carey is healthy, which he was not this past Saturday. Adrian Autry said he wasn't sure how long Peter would be out. But we go the 5 starters, Quadir Copeland, Munir Hema, and Peter Carey. Of those 8, 2 or more players will either transfer or leave the program in the offseason. Date or hate?
Matt, I'm going to say date here. I can't say which of the 8 players are going to potentially leave, but this is the transfer portal as we know it now. So the days of one player staying for 4 years before moving on is absolutely gone. So teams are routinely going to turn over half of their roster in college basketball free agency, just like they do in the NBA. So Syracuse lost 4 players to the portal last year, and I just can't find a compelling reason that it won't happen this year, especially with McDonald's All-American Donnie Freeman coming in along with sharpshooter Elijah Moore. I just feel like there's going to be people that feel like they're being recruited over and they're going to want to enter the portal.
So as I was thinking about this, like, do you have an inkling? And obviously these are best guesstimates. Do you have an inkling of who those guys might be? Because I'm looking at, I think Judemans would be one of those guys. But you look at the rest of the roster, and I don't know, like, I'm trying to think of who is that, and, you know, these are amicable things at times too, but who is that unhappy with his role that he would seek a better role somewhere else? I know you mentioned the guys coming in will affect some of that as well, but like JJ Starling, I think he's happy with his role. He's getting minutes. He's producing. He's at home. Like, I see that being a good fit. Quadir Copeland, Malik Brown, also the same things. Chris Bell, maybe. I could see he's having some success, and him and Adrian Autry have butted heads a little bit at time about what else he does on the floor besides shoot. And then Justin Taylor, like, he's still starting. He's getting 25 minutes, and the guy's not hitting any shots. Like, I don't know where he could go, where he would find more minutes, you know? And maybe he's one of those guys that shifts to a bench role, but maybe actually improves his performance because of that next year. Who do you think would be the guys that would be most likely to leave if that's the case?
I think it has to be Justin Taylor, because I think he's in the wrong system right now. I think the best system for him allows him to play like Joe Girard. You set pin screens for him. You have him run off curls and have him as a spot up shooter in that way. The way they're using him right now, he can't create his own shot. So I feel like, you know, this is a guy who hasn't had more than double digit scoring just once since the turn of the year. And he's really been struggling. He only took 3 shots in the game against Clemson, one game after he only took 1 shot against Louisville. So he has to go into a system where they're going to find him easy looks. And that's just not happening right now. So I would put Justin Taylor at the top of that list. I would also consider Peter Carey. I know you mentioned him as someone who's still currently developing, but they don't have, again, they're not using their centers the way that they really need to. And I'm not sure if he's going to be developing. He may see an opportunity to play more and bulk up with another team that fits his style of play better. So I would put the 2 of them at the top of the list. But again, this is not with any insider knowledge. This is just extrapolating from what I see from stats.
You heard it here first. Wes admitted he has no knowledge. I don't know. That may have been a simplistic extrapolation from his quote, but what the heck? Let's just stick with it anyway. We will have some more knowledge, actually, coming back here on the other side of the break as we wrap things up in the Juice and the Cues podcast.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Back here on the Juice on the Cues podcast, Wes Chang alongside Matt D'Agostino. Matt, let's wrap things up here. And, you know, Matt, we just had the Super Bowl on Sunday, so I wanted to stay with the NFL because Dwight Freeney was just selected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He becomes the 9th Syracuse player to receive that distinction. Syracuse is now 7th on the all-time schools list in putting players into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, passing a little school called Alabama for alums in that Hall of Fame, which is pretty impressive. 7 Pro Bowl appearances, 3 All-Pro appearances for Freeney. And Matt, you and I got to watch two Hall of Famers while we were at Syracuse. I think that 4 years from now, Carmelo Anthony will get that call the first year he becomes eligible for the Pro Basketball Hall of Fame.
Yeah, for me, really, the last truly impact player that Syracuse has maybe had on the football side of things, we got to watch him for one season while we were attending Syracuse, and just like an unstoppable force. I mean, there are, we got spoiled with Carmelo to where you look back now and it's like there's not even a question as to who the best college basketball player I've ever laid eyes on in person was, other than Carmelo Anthony. In football, for Syracuse guys that I've seen in person, Dwight Freeney was that guy for me. We also saw Larry Fitzgerald come in when Pittsburgh came to town, and that's honestly the best college football player in general that I've seen in person. But Dwight Freeney, the last part of a last really good Syracuse football team, that 11-2 team in the 2001 season, well-deserved for him. And unlike Donovan McNabb, somebody that I could actually root for because he was not part of a bitter rival like the Philadelphia Eagles for my New York Giants. So good to see a Syracuse guy on the list, and hoping that Fran Brown can find more guys like Dwight Freeney to bring into the fold. And maybe there's a few more Hall of Famers down the road. Basketball wise, I don't know if this guy's a Hall of Famer, Wes, but we like to look at former Syracuse guys that are showing up and showing out in different places. Jeremy Grant, a guy who could have been traded again this trade deadline season, the NBA trade deadline happening last week. He did not move from Portland. And on Thursday, the day of the trade deadline, he went out against Detroit and hung up 49 points on the Pistons. Something that these days in the NBA, Wes, 49 points is just a ho-hum game when you've got Embiid and Luka going for 70-plus and Booker for 60. But 49, no slouch of a performance, and Jeremy Grant continues to just be a steadying force for Syracuse. 22 points a game, or I say for Syracuse, for a Syracuse alum in Portland. 22 points a game, 46% from the field, and for a rebuilding team like Portland is, he's in year one of a five-year contract where he's going to be making about $120 million the next four seasons. So
he's making Matt D'Agostino money. What can we say?
Know, yeah, I mean, he's, I hide it a little better, apparently, than he may. But good to see a performance like that. Jeremy Grant, again, I know we've mentioned it, second-round pick to have this kind of success in the NBA, a really cool story to come out of Syracuse. But with that, Wesley, we have hung up another edition of the Juice on the Cuse podcast. Our podcast MVP goes to Brad Bierman. I am happy to come in and have mop-up duty. And once again, Wes Chang, solid starting five contributions across the board. He's the Malik Brown of the Juice on the Cuse.
That's a big podcast compliment.
The 5x5. So, Wes, great job once again by you. For Wes, I'm Dags. Thanks for watching on the Believe Network and on Rivals. You've been listening to the Juice on the Cuse podcast.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.